Fixing hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FU commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN, the worldwide leader in sports, I suppose. Yeah, sports. We'll go with sports.
I'm Ryan Lambert from the Truth and Reconciliation Committee.
I'm Sean McIndoe from The Athletic.
And you're in Puck Soup's part two of our season preview. Part one was last week where Lambert and I did the classic Puck Soup over-unders. Sean's back with us this week for the full division preview as requested. So a little bit of USA-Canada knowledge. As you know, this podcast is exemplary in its ability to capture both sides of the border. I was speaking with Emily Kaplan, my colleague at ESPN, yesterday about this, and I was asked about it this morning on the radio as well in Edmonton. I would say the buzz in Canada for this season, probably a bit higher than the buzz in the U.S. Now, this isn't something out of the norm. I mean, it is obviously Canada's game, as Ryan and I know. But I would say that there's a big disparity. And granted, I think a lot of it has to do with there being a few issues that are distracting the American populace at the moment. Raging pandemic, open sedition, white supremacy, that kind of thing. But I do think that there certainly is a little bit more buzz in Canada and a little less buzz in the U.S. as this season opens. I give the floor to Lambert. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you listen to or watch any kind of Canadian content, they're like, oh my God, it's the Canadian division. It's the Canadian division. Can you believe it? They're all going to play. Every game is going to be as good as seven Stanley Cup game sevens. They're all going to be incredible. That Winnipeg-Ottawa Tuesday night game in March, it's going to be the greatest hockey game ever played because it's Canada versus Canada and it matters so much. And then you go, oh, what about the rest of the league? They're like, what rest of the league?
Right. And meanwhile, here in the States, we're like, where's St. Louis playing? That's basically our level of excitement about the realignment.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Sean, did you know that we are so blasé about the season here down in the States?
No, I thought hockey was huge in the United States. I was under the impression that we had record revenues and Gary Bettman had made it a cultural touchstone. This is typical for every season, but yeah, it's probably especially true this year for a couple reasons up here. I mean, first of all, obviously no scoop here. Canada loves hockey. We've been without it for longer than we normally are. We're in the dead middle of winter. It feels like hockey's overdue. Plus you got the All-Canadian division. Plus you got the Raptors have already started and they're no good.
Terrible.
So, you know, they're not distracting a lot of attention. And the Blue Jays haven't done anything despite talking a big game about the offseason so far. They've been completely quiet, so it's not like the sports pages have a ton of competition for things to talk about. So yeah, it's pretty much all hockey all the time up here, and and you know what, rightly so. I'm happy the season's getting started, and as much as I don't think it would ever work long term, 1 year of an All-Canadian division I think is going to be fun. That's except for the Ottawa-Winnipeg games. Those are going
to
be
different. Yeah. I do think there's a movement afoot to try to make this permanent. I've seen a few of those sort of think pieces about, you know, whether this should be a permanent thing going forward. I take it you're in the much of a good thing.
I just don't see how it works travel-wise, time zone-wise. Like, I feel like it's the sort of thing where – and I think the first year is going to be fun, and maybe after the first year there will be – momentum to change it, but I think it's the sort of thing you get 3 or 4 years down the line and you're going to be like Vancouver fans are going to be sitting there going, wait a second, our team travels, you know, we're right next to Seattle almost and our team traveled 5 times as much as theirs did and we're always exhausted by the playoffs and how come half our games start at 4 o'clock
and Toronto, Ottawa, and Montreal are all like, yep.
Yeah. So it's yeah, it's, you know, that's going to be a thing. I mean, trust me, man, the first time the Leafs play the Bruins in the conference final and get swept and everyone goes, wait a second, the Leafs had to go out, make six trips to Vancouver this year. You'll see them switch it up. So I don't know. It's to me, this is like the outdoor games, man. Like, it's cool. Please don't beat it into the ground until it's not cool anymore.
Mm-hmm. Or else you'll be looking to play at a lake at some point. I will say that the geography of it, all due respect to the travails of the Vancouver Canucks, is pretty great, because it led to what I think is the best innovation of all of this, which is the reseeding of the Final Four teams. I mean, like, that's fucking great.
Yes, that should stay.
That should stay.
That is the one thing out of all of this that we should just forget to even argue about. I've been beating that drum for years. Even if you go back to conferences, even if you want to do it with an East and a West, there is no good reason to keep the seeding for the Final Four. Mix it up, and let's get a crazy good cup matchup some year. I mean, it would happen like once a decade that you would get something really. But let's do it, man. Let's get Pittsburgh. Imagine if Pittsburgh and Washington played in the Cup final instead of in the second round every year. Like,
yeah,
how great would that be?
Or if one of those Toronto Boston series were for the Cup.
Yeah,
I mean, like
Montreal Boston, Edmonton Calgary. Like, go down the list of all the great matchups.
So fucking cool. Yeah, I mean it. And I agree with you. Like, if you want to keep the integrity of the conferences for some reason, sure, go ahead. Make sure you have two West, two East, and that way you can kind of keep your geographic equilibrium like the NHL likes to do and sort of spread the wealth. But at the same time, I mean, the thing that we've all agreed upon here in the States on the NHL is that it is a regional sport, that all politics is local, and that you don't necessarily have to ensure that one of the teams is from California.
No.
Like, you could just have two Northeast teams play for the fucking Cup.
And I know the counter argument is always, well, what if you get two California teams, which first of all would be awesome.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, that's a rivalry matchup. But, oh, you know, what, are they going to play all the games at 11 o'clock at night? No, of course they're not. They're going to play them at 8 o'clock Eastern, like they play every game in the Cup final these days. So that's not an issue. And, yeah, you could get a bad matchup. Like, you absolutely, you could sit there and go, oh, yeah, well, Montreal-Boston would be cool, but what if we get Columbus against, you know, Winnipeg? And
I wouldn't worry about that.
First of all, like, I pulled that example out of nowhere. I mean, that get that matchup now. But we got, like, the old system gave us Edmonton, Carolina. It gave us Anaheim, Ottawa. Like, we had crappy matchups. But this way, you could get a really good, like the NFL and Major League Baseball have historical reasons for why they're divided the way they are. They were both literally two different leagues.
Two different leagues,
There's none of that in the NHL. It's, at this point, it's geography. And we have done it before where we just said, screw the conferences, and we're just going to like, they had the playoffs for a few years where they reseeded at the start, 1 through 16, let's go. And that was how they ran the playoffs. There's no history to it. There's no tradition. Like, just do the thing that gives you the possibility of New York versus Boston in the Stanley Cup final, and you could plaster that all over NBC.
Right,
everywhere, and get monster ratings, and it would be crazy fun.
Yeah, and even if, you know, I just feel like the stuff about travel is so overblown. Like, it's not like these guys are taking the train between, you know, Anaheim and Boston or whatever. Right. You know, they're getting on a fucking private jet. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's that big of a deal if you're doing it for a series. So yeah, that is always, you know, we need to have all these days off in between games during the Cup final and all that kind of stuff. I don't think so. maybe, you know, there should definitely be a day off between every game, but you don't have to go crazy.
It's also
anymore.
It's really hard to make the travel argument this season when you have a team in St. Louis being like, I volunteer for tribute when it comes to playing all the California teams rather than playing like Chicago. You know, like, it's a very, very weird deal. I don't want to discount the travel. Like, I do think that there's something to be said for that wear and tear on players and stuff, and you know, the benefit of playing in the New York metropolitan area and being like a train ride away from Jersey or Philly or whatever. Like, I think that there's something to that when it's a full regular season run, but it certainly hasn't translated into like, you know, a number of tri-state area teams winning the cup every year. Like, it's not as if that's – or even playing for the cup every year. So maybe a little overrated in that aspect. You mentioned NBC. We should probably touch on that real quick. I know that this doesn't necessarily affect Sean outside of his social media consumption on game nights. But Mike Milbury officially gone from NBC. And I know it's for the comments that he made in the playoffs last year, but probably should be for the fact that the game passed him by roughly 10 years ago. So
being real generous to Mike Milbury.
Yeah, I am being generous. I mean, you have to remember 10 years ago we still had fighting. So, I mean, there was a certain aspect of the game that Milbury was schooled in and understood. But the idea that Sam Flood, the guy who runs NBC Sports, treated this guy like he was, you know, Terry Bradshaw or some like paragon of coverage that had to be on the studio desk because America wrapped its arms around Mike Milbury is just fucking nonsense. Like, they should have changed up that studio show eons ago. And he tripped up and said something horrible, and that hastened his departure. But there he goes. And then, oh, go ahead. What are you gonna say?
I was gonna say, you know, monkey paw curls. I wish Mike Milbury wasn't on NBC anymore. What if it was somebody who also sucks? Greg, you got to renounce this wish. That's what I think what I'm saying.
Yeah, you're pissing me off because your anti Wonder Woman 1984 sentiment requires you not to make the Dreamstone reference. You had to go Monkey's Paw. But
well, even in the movie, they said it's like the Monkey's Paw. Yeah, okay, I know, I got it. Just another reason that movie stinks.
I just like the idea of a sweaty Mandalorian running up to you and being like, "Wish that Mike Milbury is no longer on the air." And then you do, and he's like, "And now I give you Mike Babcock." That's what you're talking from. Mike Babcock is going to be one of a rotating guest of analysts on NBC, and I am fucking shocked that this guy didn't have to do the mea culpa interview with Darren Drager before he got back on the air.
Or it's hockey, Greg. You don't have to do any of that shit in hockey.
I guess not. But, like, I really thought that was going to happen. And then I asked Sam Flood about that yesterday on the conference call, and his answer, legendary answer, was something along the lines of, like, we have all these conversations with the people that join our team or some such. And
one sentence.
Well, it was funny. He gave me one sentence, and then Sean Shapiro, your colleague at The Athletic, asked, like, a follow-up question, and his sentence was even shorter. I think my theory on that is that they were totally prepared yesterday to discuss all things Mike Milbury and his departure from NBC, but they didn't actually realize that people were going to be like, so this serial mental abuser that you've hired to replace him, tell us about that. And again, this isn't just people anecdotally talking about Mike Babcock, rather. This is Brendan Shanahan holding a press conference during a Board of Governors. I was standing right there next to him talking about how Babcock's behavior as a head coach was inappropriate. And, like, I don't know how you have this guy on the air and not even address that. Not even address that in the conference call before the season. You don't even have to have Babcock on the air to, like, talk about it. But you should be able to at least address it. Like, you should be able to be, like, you know, speaking on behalf of the guy I just hired. But it's such a fucking tone-deaf thing. I just don't understand it. And again, to go back to what everybody said, where is the clamor for Mike Babcock? Like, where is
– Well, that's it. Because Mike Babcock has done TV up here. I don't know how much of that you guys have seen. Not since he was fired, but, like, in the past, they kind of had him do a little bit here and there. And he wasn't super great at it. Like, he doesn't – He's got a personality, but it's not, at least
the raw charisma.
It's not a TV personality, because like Mike Milbury, for all his many many faults, had personality that worked for television in a certain way. I mean, the problem was that personality then was a gateway to all sorts of nonsense that didn't make the broadcast any better. But he at least had up that personality. Like Don Cherry had a 10 out of 10 perfect TV personality, you know. Brian Burke is maybe on the way to getting there. Babcock, let's see. But he doesn't strike me as a guy that's And I say this as someone who thinks Mike Babcock deserves another chance, deserves, you know, that I think his what he had been doing and how he'd been conducting himself was definitely a problem. But I also think Mike Babcock had the bad luck of his situation kind of triggering this flood of other stories and bigger stuff like Bill Peters that he kind of got swept up in. And now he's like just one of the bad coaches. Whereas as much as I think that, you know, what he did to Mitch Marner, for example, was garbage, that's not the same as what Bill Peters was doing. And I don't mind Mike Babcock getting another opportunity. Maybe this will be it. Maybe he'll go on TV and it'll be like the Brian Burke thing, where you're like, hey, this guy's actually pretty good. He's got some interesting things to say. And then it gets his profile back out there. And instead of doing the 5-minute or 10-minute sit down, it's 5 or 10 minutes at a time. And the hockey world comes to appreciate this guy again. And then he's back behind a bench if that's what he wants to do. I can just see this also being something where people are like, why'd you put this guy on TV? He doesn't make me enjoy this broadcast.
I would push back on deserves. I think can earn another chance in the league.
Deserves the opportunity for another chance. Let me thread the needle that way.
Like, but that opportunity has to come with contrition. Like that's the problem I have with this, is that at no point has Mike Babcock even addressed giving
and Johan maybe we'll Franzen get that. Maybe we get. Maybe that's the first broadcast where.
It won't be because unless they've been guilted into it now because of what happened yesterday, it won't be because there wasn't any inkling of that on from the head of NBC Sports yesterday, and that's the part of it I just don't understand, is that, you know, he's obviously part of his image rehabilitation, but at some point there has to be an acknowledgement of I've grown as a coach, or I've grown as a person, or I acknowledge the fact that maybe I can't be as cruel as I was. And again, those are two of the incidences that we know. Have I heard many more on the down low that have not been substantiated? Yes. It's the tip of the iceberg. So either you come back as a coach that recognizes your tactics, and let's be honest, they're tactics. I mean, having Mitch Marner list his shittiest teammates and then sharing that list with those shitty teammates when he's a rookie is a tactic. It's not him trying to be fucking outright cruel to Marner. He's trying to do his, you know, sports psychology McGill degree motivation bullshit. So you have to acknowledge that the shit that you used to do doesn't fly now, that maybe it shouldn't have flown then. And then, yeah, I don't think there's a reason why he can't come back if there's at least an acknowledgement of that. But there's been no acknowledgement of it, and he's gotten a job on television. Oh, and by the way, from the television aspect, my biggest problem with Mike Babcock versus Mike Milbury, Brian Burke, and Don Cherry, Mike Babcock wants to get a job. So I think that colors everything he says in that gig when he wants to get another job. Now, maybe it's Seattle where it won't matter, right? But maybe it's with a current NHL team, and then it does matter that he might, you know, take the gloves off and put them gently next to him rather than being a tried and true, honest evaluator of these players because he's trying to get a job.
I think that's a fair point. It also applies to a lot of other people in broadcasting.
Totally.
You know, Pierre McGuire comes to mind. Half of the people your network employs in pro football apparently are contenders for every GM job. So I mean that is a problem, but it's a common one, and it apparently hasn't stopped anyone else from getting work. So
yeah, and it
has stopped Pierre from getting work. Let's be honest.
Well, I think Pierre has stopped Pierre from getting work.
Sorry, Lambert. What were you gonna say?
I was just going to say, like, I don't look at Mike Babcock's press conferences, at, like, anything we know about him, and go, ooh, boy, this guy has the charisma to really make that between periods show sizzle. Like, he's just going to go, oh, yeah, you know, break out here, you know, whatever. He's just going to say fucking nothing because that's what he's always done. And he doesn't, like, he doesn't emote a lot. He does, like, there's just nothing, like, he's a video game character in terms of he just kind of says everything very flat and matter of fact, and there's nothing, like, where you go, oh, I can't wait to see this guy on TV. And that's the thing I don't get, is, like, even leaving aside everything else, when did you ever watch Mike Babcock say anything about any subject related to hockey and go, ooh, this guy, electrifying. You know, it just never happened.
But look, here's the only thing because I agree with everything you just said. Typically, a job like this, they don't just call a guy up and go, "Hey, do you want to come be on TV?" There would have been lots of they would have brought him in, they would have put him in a studio, they would have seen what he can do, seen what he sounded like. I wouldn't, you know, there are guys that I mean, there have certainly been guys in my lifetime where I've been like, that guy's going to be amazing on TV. He's going to be, and then they get on there and you're like, he's awful. Like the biggest one for me ever was Ty Domi, like this great personality. And then he was just terrible. Like, he just came across so fake and like he was trying so hard and it just didn't work. And then there's other guys where like, I never was like, you know, Patrick Sharp's going to be amazing on TV. I certainly was never like, you know, who's going to be a great TV guy? Kevin Bieksa, that guy's going to be fun. But somebody saw something, brought him in, tried him out, and was like, you know, maybe that's going on with that. Like, maybe Babcock's going to be good. Maybe he's going to be contrite once he's on the air. There's a lot of maybes. Or maybe we're going to watch the very first broadcast and be like, nope, he's just there because he has a name and it's...
Well, again, like, you don't get to the joy of of watching the NBC broadcast, but it's like... I mean, Mike Milbury was the same way, where he was just like, let's break down this play. Okay, yep, that guy's a coward, whatever he says, you know? And, like, again, a guy that I never got it because I wasn't like, oh, this isn't – like, I agree with him, disagree with him, whatever. Like, Don Cherry's an exciting broadcaster, right?
Yeah.
Agree with him, disagree with him. I don't know that you would say the same about Mike Milbury. Like, who was tuning in and like, oh, I can't wait to hear what Milbury has to say tonight?
I've told the story before. One of my very first times in a press box, I was in Toronto, and the sound on the TV wasn't working for Coach's Corner. And I watched half the Toronto media have a meltdown because they couldn't hear what Don Cherry was saying. At a given, like, that's what this guy was. I don't see anybody doing that for...
No,
for my and the other people, we've said this a million times on this show, but nobody wants cheerleaders. Nobody wants rah rah Homer. The NHL is so great, but also I don't mind watching people who seem to like hockey, and that seems to be lacking on both sides of the border, where it's just all these grouchy faces complaining about how it used to be better or this isn't how. Is Mike Babcock going to fix that? Is Mike dour personality who got kind of run out of the league, is he going to be the guy who comes again? Maybe, let's see what it is, but I don't think so.
You know, my heart
there it is
sparks with joy when I watch the game, the grit, the jam.
Yeah, I mean, it's really difficult at this point for me to separate Babcock, like, actually talking from the Greg Wyshynski impression of him doing that. But, again, like, you know, go on YouTube and watch Mike Babcock say anything about any subject. And it's just like, yeah, it's not a bad impression in that way. Like,
that's the sweetest thing you've ever said on this show.
Well, I mean, you know. To go
back to Sean's example, Roenick was the guy for me. Like, the guy you were like, oh, that guy's going to fucking tear it up on TV.
Oh, yeah.
And then he became a facelift zombie staring into the camera at all times. But he was miscast, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. We've said that a million times. Like, you can say a lot of stuff about Jeremy Roenick, and believe it me, we have. But... the idea that, like, he doesn't have the charisma to be on TV is wrong. Like, he absolutely does. And that's why, toward the end, they made him, like, the guy who wears a leprechaun costume and shit like that, you know? Like,
he certainly did.
And like, he was good at that. He was, you know, again, like, I was kind of all the way out on Jeremy Roenick at that point. But, who in that group was going to do that shit any better than Jeremy Roenick did? Nobody.
It's just crazy to think they bought him on to be like the Charles Barkley of hockey, and by year four he was like wrestling alligators and shit.
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
It's just so great. Anyways, I wager Babcock isn't going to make much of a difference. And speaking of wagering, MyBookie is a new sponsor of the Puck Soup Podcast. Fine. Listen. It's that time of year when divisions are decided and champions are crowned and legends are born. It's time for the National Football League playoffs. Yet another reason why hockey is being a little bit overshadowed these days. You've waited and watched your team all year as they rose to the top or fell to the bottom, but now it's your turn to win big. MyBookie, the industry's leading online sportsbook casino. Not hard to understand why thousands of lines to bet on all your favorite sports are there, and people are betting them all the time. They've got all the latest odds, period. Take advantage of MyBookie's prop builder and live in-game betting, where every single run, throw, shot, touchdown is another chance for you to put your cash in your pocket. They got the odds on opening night of the National Hockey League on their site right now. Apparently, people like the under in the Philly-Pittsburgh game. Carter Hart, all that. Visit their mobile-friendly website today and get your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. Just use the promo code PUCK, P-U-C-K, when you make your first deposit. The best part is they make it simple with a variety of different ways to deposit instantly, including credit card, bank transfer, and get ready for it, Lambert, Bitcoin.
Okay. I have a thing about that. Remind me at the end.
There's a guy in New York who's trying to sell two of his bars for Bitcoin. Like, he's only going to sell his bar.
Oh, okay. We're just doing this in the ad? I can do that.
No. Not the ad. you can use your laptop or your phone, and it's not too late to make your New Year's resolution a resolution to get paid. Again, get your first deposit matched halfway up to $1,000 with promo code PUCK, P-U-C-K. Bet, win, and get paid at MyBookie. It's MyBookie.com or on the mobile app. All right, 30 seconds on Bitcoin. Go.
Did you see the thing in the New York Times today about all the guys who bought a bunch of Bitcoin, you know, 10 years ago or however long it was, and now they've lost their passwords to their accounts and they're... And they're like sitting on like there was one guy who was like, oh, yeah, I have, you know, however many Bitcoin, it's worth like $220 million these days. And I can't get into the account because I forgot the password. And the account is set up so that I only get 10 guesses ever. And it's locked. and I'm on number 8. I've used up all but 2 of them. And so he's just like sitting up at night every night going, what could that fucking password be?
That's enormously relatable. This is the only Bitcoin story where I've ever understood
what actually happened.
Like that. I get it.
One of my old roommates was a big like believer in Bitcoin in like 2012, 2013, and he was buying it when it was, you know, under $100, and now it's worth like, I think, 22,000 and change. And so he's doing really well for himself. And that is definitely a little bit of me kicking myself for just being like, shut the fuck up. Nobody cares about Bitcoin 7 or 8 years ago. And now, you know, he has definitely had the last laugh on that.
Who's going to buy stock in Apple? That kind of thing.
No, exactly.
There. Right. That password thing is so relatable, and usually what happens to me when I do hit the limit on guesses is I come to realize that my first guess was the correct guess, except I was a letter off or my finger slipped.
Yeah.
And then it really – I feel terrible about it. But there, that's palpable stress when you get to that like
$220 million. This guy lost a piece of paper worth $220 million. That's incredible.
He lost Alexei Yashin's contract?
Yeah.
Boy, there's a reference. All right, I suppose it's time for us to get down and start breaking down these divisions. Everybody remember that there's been massive realignment in the National Hockey League because of the state of the Canadian border due to the raging pandemic. And teams have moved around, and we all have new divisions, and it's the top 4 teams in each division. The wild cards take a break for a year. The classic setup. Where when I was a kid, you'd get super angry when you would finish 5th in your division, then look over at another division, and it's super easy to get into the top 4. So that'll be this.
Yeah, and that's going to happen. And I feel like
that's 100% going to happen.
And people haven't really processed that. We're going to get like halfway into the season, and suddenly people are going to be like, wait a second. Winnipeg is like 15 points behind Dallas, but they're going to make the playoffs, and it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
All right, let's start in the East. Have you guys game planned out the full finish of the division or just the playoff teams?
I just have the playoff teams.
Okay.
Like, right. I mean, in some kind of order, but, like, I couldn't tell you, you know, one through
No, that's fine. Okay. I have the whole thing just because I needed to kind of get my brain around what it's going to look like, but we can very much just do the playoff teams.
Well, Lambert, let's start. The thing to say right off the hop, though, is this season's going to be a shit show.
Yes.
In terms of, like, games getting canceled and that kind of thing. Like, it worked for a while, even in the NBA. But now games are getting postponed left and right, and there's really no end in sight for that.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, with Dallas, I think, pushing things back a few days, and now I think one of their games got moved.
Well, they're going to start the season on January 19th.
Right.
But the NHL anticipated this in the schedule the length of days. But I do wonder – so two questions before we start on the predictions, I guess. First off – do you think there's the possibility that they go to a hub or a bubble during the season, given that it's all intra-division play and they could in theory do it? Do you think they do it or they stay in the home arenas?
I think they stay in the home arenas until they absolutely have no choice but to not do that. And I don't think it'll get to that point.
I don't think so either, but the possibility is there. Second thing, do you think that the NHL has it a little bit easier than the NBA in the sense that they do have the taxi squads and an extra, you know, six guys that are going to be around to kind of fill in? In theory, it should be harder because the NBA is a smaller roster, but I kind of believe that, you know, maybe it'll be easier for the NHL in some ways
to just swap guys in. Yeah, I think that's an interesting consideration, but like, you know, me and Sean did a couple weeks ago. We did the awards predictions betting kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I think we didn't account for was like some COVID. Superstar is going to miss like 7 games or 8 games out of a 56 game schedule because they got COVID.
Yeah.
Or there was a close contact or whatever, you know, whatever you want to say. And so, you know, the idea that like, oh, I'm going to put all my money on Austin Matthews to win the MVP, whatever, like Austin Matthews could miss a week. And if you miss a week in this season, that's going to be a significant portion of your schedule. So,
you know, it's kind of amazing we're on the precipice of these predictions, and it occurs to me that like one of us is going to be right because a team got COVID and didn't make the playoffs, and then we have to be like, I knew all along. It's so fucking morbid.
That's the thing, man. Like, because I've been doing this sort of stuff in various formats and forums this week. I know people like predictions. I know people want real predictions, not wishy-washy, you know, maybe 60-40 chance. They want people to, you know, put a flag in the ground. There's way too much certainty being broadcast about this season. This is... The level of randomness in the regular NHL is way higher than we'd ever want to acknowledge. In a 56-game season, with COVID out there, where I think some teams aren't going to play 56 games. Like, we're right. going to get to – I'm not saying the whole season's going to get shut down, but there may be a point where we just – the league has to say, hey, by the way, if you don't get to 56, it's going to be points percentage. And
points
that's
percentage.
Just, you know,
they've already said it.
Goes.
Like, I mean, that,
have
I mean,
they officially said?
Well,
that?
not officially. No, my communications with people in the league have brought up that fact that there's a very good chance it could be points percentage that ends up being the determining factor.
They should say it publicly now because it's a very good. Like, you can't get halfway into the season and then suddenly when like. It's coming down to the Rangers or, you know, some smaller market for a playoff spot suddenly be like, oh, by the way, here's
whatever gets the Rangers in. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Right.
Yeah. We are like-
and it's so it's here's the other thing that's very fucked about all this. Right. Is so, you know, I've talked a lot about how the college hockey season has gone and somebody I decided not to write about college hockey this year because I was like. You know, the way I write about college hockey is like examining statistical trends and all that kind of stuff. And it's, you just can't do it that way. In a season where, you know, if I'm looking right here, one team has played 16 games, another team has played 2. And we're at the same point in the season. And so, you know, I saw somebody today wrote a story about like, okay, what does the Hobey Baker race look like? And, you know, again, it's some guys have played 15 games, and the guy that they said at the end of the article, you know, if he plays enough games, you know, he's going to be he looks like he could be the guy. He's played 5 games right now. It's Spencer Knight from BC, who's a phenomenal goalie, and in a normal season, I would be totally convinced that he would be at least a contender. And like, yeah, he has a .950 save percentage, but he's played 5 fucking games. And so you're going to be having to have that conversation too of like, okay, well, who was the MVP for a team that played 52 games and he played 46 of them?
Mm.
Could Connor McDavid be that guy? And like that's going to mess up so much. It's good. Well, I mean, what about Leon Dreisaitl, Greg? But it's going to make so much of a difference.
If some team plays 30 games and they make the playoffs by one win,
no,
I don't think it'll ever get to that point.
Well, so for whatever it is, like you're right. Like normally, if a guy didn't play the whole season, you go, he can't be the MVP. But if he played his team's whole season and every one of his team's games was therefore counted more than anyone else's,
yeah,
it's a great point. God, the arguments that we're gonna have over this are gonna be
I can't wait.
Awful.
It's gonna be so good for business.
I'm gonna hate it.
I think at the most it'd be 4 games that the teams would miss, like 2 homestands.
I'll take the over on that.
Like yeah,
for some
I think,
team in the league, or
I
that they end up having to make up a lot.
Games.
Yeah,
and they have to play like they at the end of the season the league builds a week into the schedule for pushes back the postseason and says okay, but you have to play 6 games in 8 days.
It's the National Hockey League regular season qualification tournament. They'll just name it.
It's going to be insane.
Well, and then, of course, sell.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, would they do that? If let's say 2 teams are fighting for the last playoff spot and both those teams haven't played enough games, do they just go, you know what, we're going to throw you guys in a 3-game series at the end of the season, and that's how we're going to figure out who makes it? And when do they decide that, and when do they announce that versus just saying, today, here's what the rules are?
That's the other thing in college hockey is, you know, the league that is around the greater Boston area is called Hockey East, and they haven't announced how they're going to seed the playoffs this year. Again, you know, one team has played 13 games, one team has played 2, and all of those are in like within their own conference. So in theory, one team could have 30 games count in the season standings, and another team could have 12, right? And like we are now, you know, 3 months away, 2 months away from the playoffs starting in Hockey East, and they haven't announced how they're going to seed the playoffs.
Mm.
And it's like, yeah, you kind of have to fucking say what that is beforehand, I think.
I like Sean's idea where Gary Bettman comes strolling in like Tom Colicchio during Top Chef and just changes the rules arbitrarily during the challenge.
Right.
Hey, guys.
Yeah, no. And with Hockey East, it's like whatever benefits BC and BU the most is usually what they end up
right,
going
will happen,
with.
But yeah. They'll just – right. And I like your idea of whatever the rule change is towards the end of the season is just going to be made to get the Rangers in the playoffs.
Yeah.
People
the
will say that, right? Like look what happens
right,
in the lottery. You know,
that
some dude
would,
drops
that would just be the perception.
And,
yes.
Yeah.
Right. We're going to go by how many players named Alexis and Igor teams have. Eastern Division. I'm sorry, Mass Mutual NHL East Division.
Let's agree to never do that again.
Don't ever do that again.
Sorry. NHL East Division presented by Mass Mutual. There.
This is the hardest one.
Got it right.
It really is.
What do you got, Lambert?
I think I would go Bruins, Flyers, Penguins. This is a tough one. I guess I'll go with the Capitals.
Sean?
Yeah.
Talk it through.
Mine would be simple. Okay, so let's start from the bottom. I'm taking New Jersey off. Sorry,
yes.
We
should mention Corey Crawford retired because he lost his smile.
I wouldn't have them in the playoffs even with Corey Crawford, but at least you could say, oh, maybe they get...
They're going to be a tough out a lot of nights if they have Corey Crawford. Now,
I like Mackenzie Blackwood a lot, but I think they had the right approach there to get a veteran guy.
Yeah, 1A, 1B.
They don't
have that. They have a 1B and a C,
and Scott
maybe?
Wedgwood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really want to, you know, I've been beating this dead horse that I think people are sleeping on Buffalo, but I don't know that they're sleeping enough to get them into the playoffs in this division. As somebody last week was telling me that they thought you could make a case that Buffalo may have been hurt the most by the new divisions, just because this was a team
that
in the old Atlantic, that it was top heavy, but there was maybe a room for a fourth or a fifth spot. And now it's like, I don't know where they go. Yeah. So I take them off. The Rangers, I could absolutely see going to the playoffs, but I take them out. And then
the goalies would have to get real hot all season, which is possible, but
I'm left with the same five teams that I'm guessing Ryan was kind of going through. I know some people are taking Boston out. I don't have the guts to do that. Washington. Washington won the division last year as far as the regular season.
That's wild.
You know what? Give me Philadelphia and the Islanders, and I'm going to hedge my bets that Pittsburgh. I've been saying this for 3 years, and I'm wrong every year, but when Pittsburgh, when the end comes, I think it's going to be kind of Sharks-ish in that it's going to be a bigger drop than maybe people think. So I guess I will pick them.
Not a Cody CC guy, Sean?
You know, I haven't had a chance to watch him up close. As you numbers guys don't appreciate what he brings to the table, but unproven goaltending, and I mean, also if Sidney Crosby gets hurt, I know they've got Malkin. I'm going to shut up because I'm already talking myself out of what I said. So,
all right, I agree with you on the Devils. Mostly because of the goaltending now. I am not a Buffalo guy. I wish I was. I would love nothing more than to see like them go on this unprecedented roll in the early part of the season and then keep it going, and Taylor Hall be like, I love it here. I'm going to sign 3 years. And all
I was
going
to say,
like,
man, them going on a roll early in the season is not unprecedented.
Is what they do.
That
yeah.
Every year they start.
Right, but now it's like 22% of the schedule.
Yeah.
But like I said on ESPN this week, like there's a better chance of Taylor Hall being traded at the deadline than there is the Sabres making the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree.
Without question. Islanders next. A lot of diminishing returns. I think Sorokin's going to be real good. Maybe not as good as Shesterkin, which is why I have the Rangers next. And I've been trying to will myself into putting the Rangers in the playoffs, but I just don't think defensively they're there yet.
Not a big Jack Johnson guy?
Not a big chat. Well, it's also team defense, right? I mean, I think the goaltending is going to be great, but I don't know if it's great enough to overcome some of the systemic problems they have defensively.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're still dealing with a team that is built to win a cup within the next decade, but they're still babies, and I can't trust Lafreniere and Kako and those guys to really play playoff caliber defense quite yet. Boston fourth. I can't believe how people are overlooking the fucking decimation of that blue line on this team. It is not the Bruins anymore.
Not good.
It's not the Bruins anymore. But they're still good enough to finish fourth in the division.
Well, I think the thing you would say is that Charlie Coyle is perhaps a bit underrated the last few years. And, you know, put him in a bigger role, he can succeed. And then Grizzlick is your Krug replacement on the power play. Like, I get all that and... Yeah.
You mean Charlie McAvoy? You said Coyle, but you mean McAvoy.
Oh, right? I meant, yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah,
no,
okay.
I think Charlie Coyle's at 31 years old is finally ready to become number one.
The player we all think he is, right.
Yeah. They have too many Charlies on this freaking team.
They truly do. So I take them fourth. I'll take Pittsburgh third. Very hard team to figure out where the window is as far as open or closed. I do agree with Sean that, you know, there's always the possibility that they could lose one of their big guns for a portion of the season, but they've shown time and time again that they're able to withstand a loss like that almost to a very peculiar degree. I like Philly second. and then that'll give you your Philly Pittsburgh love fest in the first round. And I like Washington to win a division because one, the Laviolette effect. I'm a little bit worried about the goaltending. Admittedly, that's the only thing that really keeps me back from wholeheartedly embracing this.
Well, you want to talk about team defense? I mean,
well, I'm hoping the coach helps with that. And I also think that they have improved themselves on their blue line and are still a potent team up front. And if there's one thing the Capitals...
Someone, like, who did they get to help the blue line this summer? I'm legitimately asking. I don't remember.
Well, I mean, Chara is whatever, right? But, like, Brendan Dillon there for a full year.
Oh, I do like Brendan Dillon. That's true.
Yeah, they bought him on last year.
Yeah.
You know, they obviously still have Carlson there. Orloff, Justin Schultz is there now, too. Though,
the thing you were saying.
The great Trevor Van Riemsdyk, who got a shout-out from Pierre McGuire on the call as to why the Capitals' defense is great. You know, so on and so forth. I think the Capitals are really good at one thing, and that's winning regular season, you know, division titles. They've always been good at it. It's outside of catching Gretzky, it's Ovechkin's legacy. And so I think they'll win the East. All right. The Central Division. Oh, what do you got, Lambert?
I don't think it's telling tales out of school here. I will go with Tampa. This is one I should say. I have a pretty clear with the East. I just said the four teams I think are going to make the playoffs in whatever order. I think it's Tampa. Then it's Carolina. Then you get into the, well, you know, who knows. And I think I would go with Nashville and Columbus.
Ah, that is exactly my top four, my friend. We both have Dallas missing the playoffs.
Yeah.
I have Dallas in the playoffs. Tampa, number one, yeah. I think that's, we don't need to overthink it. Carolina, I have, like, I'm having to, like, re-examine my feelings about Carolina because I think over the last few years, they've been such a trendy pick year after year, especially in the online world, and we can probably figure out why that is. It feels like too much, and so I kind of push back against it. But now I feel like I'm pushing back too much, and I'll just say, man, I wish they had addressed the goaltending. I get why they didn't, but I'd if Carolina had a shiny new number one goaltender, I'd feel a lot more optimistic and maybe match the optimism I'm hearing from elsewhere on them, but they're in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Give me Dallas and give me Columbus with Nashville missing, Detroit and Chicago I don't even really consider, and Florida, a Bobrovsky bounce back I think is plausible, but I can't get them into my top four.
Yeah, this is a thing where it's four teams fighting for two spots again. Between Dallas, Nashville, Columbus, Florida, any two of those teams, I think is perfectly plausible.
Yeah. I mean, the thing with Dallas is I don't think they're as good as the fact that they were a finalist suggests. Like, you know, I don't think they're a truly elite team, but they got off to a terrible start last year, and then last 50 or 60 games of the season, they were right up there with the, you know, like you can't just go and wipe out a team's worst stretch. But if you start from November 1st, Dallas was one of the very best teams in the league all season long, and then went into the playoffs and rolled. So, this is kind of one of those things where it's like I almost feel like they did that without their starting goaltender and. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like they've kind of earned the right to be in that top four until they show otherwise. But I'll be shocked if Tampa doesn't make the playoffs. I will be very, very surprised if Carolina doesn't. If Dallas doesn't, I'll be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, Dallas, Nashville, and Columbus are all that like that for me. I just like whatever. Yeah. I think Nashville's a playoff team. I could see the argument on Columbus not being a playoff team, especially if they trade Dubois for some reason. I don't think they will in the regular season.
Or if that whole situation goes sideways.
Yeah, that's
because I don't know that Tortorella is the guy I want managing a powder keg.
So, right. Yeah.
Which I'm not saying that's where it is yet, but
being a powder keg himself, completely agree on that. So I have time. I have time for those arguments. Carolina, this might be the best version of this team during the Eric Tolsky regime. You go the Aho line, Trocheck, you know, centering his line, and they've been playing Svechnikov with Trocheck. Jordan Staal still got it, something left. I mean, fucking Zingle and Martinuk on their fourth line. And then the defense in front of that goaltending. Like, I agree with you on the goaltending, but the blue line is so fucking good in front of them that it may once again make up for it. That's a team that I, like, hedge on whether or not I think they could win the division, because I think they might be able to. But they're real good. I would be shocked if they didn't make the playoffs. I would put that in the shocked category.
I can't make a legitimate case that they're better than Tampa, but could Tampa have one of those seasons where they look around and go, you know what, we're the champs, we're making the playoffs in this division. It's a 56-game sprint. We can maybe take a foot off the gas a little bit here, and our eyes are on the playoffs and being ready for that, and we don't need to be, you know, we don't need to finish first. And Carolina slips into that void. Yeah, I could see that.
Do we have Detroit last or Chicago last?
Detroit last.
Yeah,
I think it'll be really close, but I still have to go with Detroit.
Detroit has goaltending though.
Yeah, they have a
goaltender.
Does Chicago have goaltending? And I know Chicago doesn't have any goaltenders we've ever heard of. But who knows? Like, you know, I've said this before. We went into last year saying that Columbus didn't have goaltending, and Columbus turned out to have pretty darn good goaltending. And this is like a way more extreme version of that. But I'm goaltending is so important, and yet I don't want to put ever too much stock in it making a prediction, because who knows? Especially in 56 games, where these three guys might get 20 games each, and who knows?
Both teams have a real motivation to suck ass as well, so it could be a race to the bottom in some ways. I don't know. They're both sad and weak.
Every Detroit fan is very excited about finishing dead last so that they can get that fourth overall pick again after three teams pass them in the lottery per every single year.
Well, you're just a ray of light over there. Speaking of Ray, today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by Raycon. Okay. Raycon, as you know, is one of our favorite sponsors. It's a product we all use. These are the best, in my opinion, Bluetooth earbuds that I have ever had. They make great sound accessible to everyone. Their wireless earbuds start at half the price of other premium audio brands. And the best thing ever is that they fit well. Again, I've had to take up running during this quarantine pandemic thing, and when I wear other wireless earbud type devices, they fall out my ears. It always feels like they're falling out of my ears. It's very distracting. Not the case with the Raycon earbuds. They give you different fits to make sure that your ear holes are the right size for the little earbuds, and it's perfect. They're stylish. They are discreet looking. Sometimes Ruby will start talking to me, not realizing that I have my earbuds in from Raycon. They're great stuff. Raycon's offering 15% off of all their products for the Puck Soup listeners. And here's what you got to do to get it. Go to buyraycon.com/puck. So that's buy, B-U-Y. Raycon, R-A-Y-C-O-N, all one word, .com/puck. You get 15% off your entire Raycon order, so feel free to grab a pair of their little headphone dealies and a spare. It's 15% off at buyraycon.com/puck. It's buyraycon.com/puck. Seriously, hearty endorsement from your boys as to the quality of this product. It is great sound, a perfect fit, and, you know, will change your life. By the way, if you haven't experienced the joy of having one Raycon in one ear while you're unloading the dishwasher, follow my lead and do it. It really does make menial tasks a lot better. Raycon. Let's go to the West. What you got, Lambert?
Colorado and Vegas, a clear top two. I have Minnesota and I have St. Louis.
Hmm. All right. Sean?
I've got the same four, although for me it's Vegas, Colorado, St. Louis in a top three. And we'll maybe talk about this a bit more when we get to the wagering some imaginary money. I feel like we've all gotten so excited for this big Colorado Vegas main event that we forgot that St. Louis was the best regular season team in that conference last year.
Like, well, Sean, they lost to Jake Allen, you know?
Yeah. They're 1 year removed from a cup. They were really good last year. Pietrangelo, obviously, is huge, but they bring in Torrey Krug. Mike Hoffman comes in for next to nothing. Like, I feel like I don't have a problem if you want to put him third, but I feel like just generally everyone's kind of sleeping on the Blues, and maybe just because, I mean, nobody wants to do a prediction where you go, oh yeah, the recent Stanley Cup winner is going to be good again. You don't get any credit for that, but I don't know. Like, I just personally, when I was going to do my predictions, I called up last year's standing. I was like, the Blues were in first in the West. They were better than Colorado, better than Vegas. Yeah, last year they were, not by a lot, but by a little. So I've got those as the big three. I've got the California teams out of it, and then it's Minnesota versus Arizona for the last spot.
Tough call.
I think it's Minnesota, but I could see that one going either way because Arizona's got the goaltending, and you know, if Rick Tocchet wants them to grind out 2-1 wins, then I could see it. But also, they weren't all that good last year from start to finish, and they lost their best forward in free agency. So I don't have them.
Hey, they still have Christian Fisher, don't they?
The John Chayka legacy projects. Your Christian Fishers, your Christian, and then well, in Dvorak on that team. I don't know who the fuck cares. I'm going Vegas first, then Colorado, then St. Louis, and then Minnesota. Once again, much like the Rangers in the East, I was trying to find a way to get San Jose in the top four. I know the goaltending sucks, but I really think that their problem last season was health, and that group still healthy, provided Burns isn't in complete regression, I think could still be a playoff team, but I can't in good faith put them over a Minnesota team that is strong defensively, will have better goaltending, and adds Kaprizov to the offensive mix, and I think he's going to win the Calder.
So yeah, I would agree with that. But the other thing to say about the Sharks, though, is that goaltending's so fucking bad.
It could be very terrible. Now, there's a part of me that wants to believe that Dubnyk's going to be better because he was dealing with a lot of off-ice stuff last season, and you can't discount that. But he's going to be playing behind a team that hasn't exactly done its goaltending many favors in the last
year. Right, and he's 34, and
yeah, but I mean, it's 34 in goalie years, though. That's 34 in goalie years. You could play until you're 38 if you're a goalie.
If you're Henrik Lundqvist, anyway. I don't know about the rest of
Arizona behind San Jose, and then Anaheim and LA finish it out. There's going to be a moment in which you have to put LA somewhere beside last place, but I don't think this is quite the moment.
Yeah, I've said this in a couple places. The Kings are the one team, like, they're bad because they're rebuilding, but the rebuild is going really well. Like, their pipeline is excellent, and there is that part of you that goes, okay, they clearly they're still going to be bad, and then you go, unless they have one of those seasons like the 2017 Maple Leafs where all the kids arrive at the same time and just poof, and you skip the whole like muddling along and go straight to the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I just don't think I think even by design they're not looking to have that year this year.
I think the real mystery for me is actually the Anaheim Ducks, because to me they could finish as high as fifth if John Gibson is John Gibson again. Because in a 56 game season, if you get 43 games of really great John Gibson hockey, mm-hmm. like You could inch your way up that division because the bottom.
Lots of
the
good young
so
players lucky. Coming in there. Ryan Getzlaff in what could be his last year
last
there.
Year. Yeah,
there's pieces. That, like I said, I mean I dismissed the three California teams pretty quickly because I had to come up with four. But there's no certainty on any of this. I mean, you say like you could see them the Ducks being as high as fifth. I could see them being higher than that. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's going to be chaos.
The one thing that holds me back a little bit on Minnesota, you know, besides like just a little bit too much hype surrounding that team right now, is they are a bit of a donut. I mean, top two centers are Nick Bjugstad and Nick Bonino, for God's sakes. So it's a little bit of a donut there. But then again, fuck it, I put Vegas at the top of the West, and they're a donut. I mean, for the most part, they don't have. That's the one flaw in Vegas is that they don't have what I would consider to be a grade A center on that roster. With due respect to William Karlsson and Chandler Stephenson, like there's no McKinnon there, and there's no O'Reilly there. Yeah,
mm-hmm. yeah. There
might not even be
not
a Logan Couture there,
a Nazem Kadri there.
Yeah.
So, I definitely get that.
But if somebody becomes available, they'll somehow free up $10 million, even though they're over the
absolutely.
Cap, and
right.
go and get them. Like, we got Jack Eichel, and what are you going to do about it?
They're going to be the team that trades for Dubois, and they'll give up like William Karlsson and Alec Martinez to get him.
Right. Yep. And then they'll fire the 65-year-old woman who holds the door for the players to walk into the arena, and then still be like, well, we're still a family. It's the same vibe as it's always been.
Mm-hmm.
It's business now. Like I said, Vegas, Golden Misfits, they put on a tie and got a haircut and got a job at the bank. It's all different now. We the North division. Holy shit. Here we go. The one everybody's been waiting for. Ryan?
Toronto, number one with a bullet.
Okay. Bold pick.
Yeah, I know. That's bold really pick. Going out on a limb. And then give me, I think in this order, Calgary, Montreal, Edmonton, Vancouver, maybe a skosh below that because I just don't trust their goaltending and defense very much, and Winnipeg below that, and the Senators in the same ballpark as Winnipeg, I think I would say.
Yeah, I mean I'll put Toronto one, although with a lot less certainty than a lot of people seem to have, but I think on paper that's the best team in the division. From there, I Ottawa obviously at the bottom. Winnipeg I think is six probably on most lists. I think the other four teams are fighting for three spots. People who have listened to me and read me in other places are probably sick of me expressing confusion over all the optimism around Montreal, a team that was one win ahead of the Sabres last year and apparently, by adding a backup goalie, became cup contenders. But I don't have the guts to take them out of my playoffs entirely. So give me Vancouver, Calgary, Montreal in the playoffs, and Edmonton missing out. I think when we look back at the offseason, certainly McDavid and Draisaitl could carry them to playoffs. They could carry them to first place. That wouldn't shock me. But I think there's a very good chance we look back in the offseason and we say that the biggest story is that the Oilers didn't address the goaltending and that ends up sinking yet another year of the Connor McDavid prime.
Yeah. Their goaltending sucked last year and it didn't hurt them. And I don't think it's going to hurt them this year. I do have the guts to say Montreal missed the playoffs.
Okay.
Toronto, Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver, Montreal out.
I hope it's in that order too.
Winnipeg out, and Ottawa, I mean, out is almost in their name. But, Calgary.
God.
Asshole.
Calgary, that's because I had Ott on my fucking list here.
I understood it right away.
Calgary, to me, is in store for a boomerang. I like Jeff Ward as a coach, by the way. I think that Monahan and Gaudreau are going to be better than they were last year, and I think the Kachuk line, whatever line he plays on, is probably going to get the most ice time on the team. And then, you know, Markstrom, say what you will about the contract, but in the short term, fuck, he's good. And I think he's going to have the same transformative effect on Calgary that he had on Vancouver. Edmonton.
Yeah, not having Cam Talbot's going to be huge for the Flames.
Yes, right. That's another Minnesota thing we didn't talk about. But their team defense is real good. 56 games of Connor and Leon. Fuck, let's go. They could get that done. They could drag this carcass to the playoffs in 56 games. Well, maybe 82. I'm a little bit more nervous, but a 56 game sprint where the two of the best players in the world have to get this team into the playoffs, and you add Tyson Barrie to that power play. Come on, we're fine.
Well, okay. First of all, I think the thing to say about that is that you can't really do any better on the power play than they did last year. What was it, like 35%?
Maybe it could go 36. Maybe that's the Tyson Barrie effect.
But that's what I'm saying. I don't know how much better you could reasonably do. And then the other issue is the rest of their defense. Klefbom's out for the year. We know
that's a problem for me.
So
the Klefbom thing hurts a lot.
So just going down the how much they're paying guys: Darnell Nurse, Adam Larson, Chris Russell, Tyson Barrie, Ethan Bear, who I actually like a good amount, and then one of either Caleb Jones or Slater Cuckoo. That's their lineup every single night. I don't know.
Adam Larson.
Yeah. And then, again, that's in front of Mikko Koskinen, who, to be fair, had a good
he's
year
good.
Last year.
No, he's good. Well, Mike Smith sucks.
Mike Smith is terrible.
Good. Yeah.
But the thing with Koskinen is he good? Is he terrible?
Yes. No, he's good.
Well, the year, let's put it this way. The year before, when he played 55 games, he was a 906 goalie, but he was 917 last year, playing 38. Yeah. So he's if fine. You want to say, you know, he lands somewhere in the middle of that, I buy that. That's about league average.
Yeah.
But
38 games is what percentage of the season this year?
It's right, like, if you're going, he plays whatever percentage of the season 38 games is, he plays like 25. I don't think they do that necessarily, but like the deference everybody up there seems to show to Mike Smith, I can totally see a scenario where he plays 20 games next year and loses fucking all of them.
I agree, but I have been trying to figure out, I've been making the argument that this is a mediocre defensive team for a while, and like they should have been a mediocre defensive team last year too, and they wound up with a 585 points percentage and second in the division. So like, you figure it out.
I figured it out. They scored 58,000 goals on the power play.
Right, and they'll score a few this season too. So they're my third, and then I can't leave Vancouver out of the playoffs. And it's not my blind loyalty to the team that I planted my flag on last year. I just think Demko and Holtby are all right. They're not Markstrom, but they're going to be fine. And this is a team that's turning the corner into a contender. I completely agree.
Talk me through turning the corner.
Turning the corner means that they've got more proven high-end talent right now than does Montreal.
Yes, I agree.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that's for me. To me, it comes down to Vancouver and Montreal. Like, we can make the argument as to what they are, who are the Canucks, this, that, and the other thing. You know, is the goaltending going to be good enough? Whatever. Like, that's fine. We can have those discussions. But if the task at hand is who makes the top four in this division, and it comes down to Montreal or Vancouver, I've got more confidence in Miller, Pettersson, Besser, Horvat on anchoring your second line, Edler and Schmidt, and then Hughes being Hughes, and then your top two defense pairs are going to be pretty good. And I think Holtby and Demko are fine. I got more confidence in that group than I do in Montreal.
I guess my big reservation with Vancouver is pretty much all of their success last year was because of Markstrom, and to a lesser extent, Pettersson. Pettersson was unbelievable last year, and, you know, he should keep improving. But, like, Markstrom was the reason they barely made the playoffs. You know, and now he's not there, and they replaced him with a guy who, look, like, let's be honest about what Holtby did last year, or the last few years.
Yeah.
Sucked.
He did. I completely agree.
And Markstrom was 918 last year, and he played 43 games for them. And let's see. Let's look up Holtby's save percentage. Like, I'm not saying he's going to be as bad as he was last year, but over the last three seasons, he's a 906 goalie. And I don't know.
I am planting my flag on them in the hopes that Ian Clark gets Holtby to play better. And, you know, Holtby has shown that he can be molded and shaped by good Golden Knight coaches in the past. I just think that if you're using historical precedents to make the argument about this division and you ignore the fact, like Sean said, that Montreal was a 500 team last year and how much better they're going to be having added a bunch of UFAs and Josh Anderson, I'm just taking Vancouver in this one.
I think it's close. I think Edmonton is a step above both of those teams and therefore like the most likely of that.
And keep in mind, a 500 team in a division with Buffalo, Ottawa, and Detroit, no less.
Oh, I understand. Last year. They lost – Montreal lost every game they played to the Detroit Red Wings last year. I understand all that. With that having been said, I do think they got – their problem last year was depth. I think they got better. They're a little deeper now. And I really can't believe I'm fucking saying this, but I would rather have Carey Price and Jake Allen than an unproven guy and the ghost of Braden Holtby.
The ghost of Braden Holtby haunting the woods in Vancouver. I can't wait for all those pictures of Holtby, you know, contemplating life while reading a book in the middle of Whistler. It's gonna be beautiful. All right. So there you go. Now we move on to the actual stakes at hand. Real hardcore money that's not real. Bitcoin, if you will. We should have done the betting segment with Bitcoin now that I think about it.
I don't want to do all that math.
Yeah, it's a lot of math. This is the part of the show. It's an annual tradition here on Puck Soup in which we use $100 nut and spread it around the league on preseason wagering. Did I win this last year or did I lose this last year?
I think you won it.
Sounds about right.
I think you won it by like a margin of like $5 or something like that, but you won it barely.
Okay.
But so the way this works, last year we only had odds on who would come out of each conference to get to the cup final. So that was the only thing we bet on. This year we have odds on not only who's going to win the Stanley Cup, but also who is going to win each division.
Right.
So we are taking actually this time $200. We're betting $100 on cup winners and $100 on division winners. And the thing with the division winners is you have to bet on at least one team from every division. So, like, right. You can't just say, I'm not going to bet on the West because I think it's a tough call. You have to pick at least one of those teams. And the idea is that, you know, with all the different odds and how much of the money you spread around, what is the return on those odds going to be when everything's said and done?
Okay. Everybody got that? Good.
Yep.
We'll see.
This isn't a game show. I completely understand the rules, okay?
I'm saying record. I don't know if I did a good job explaining the rules.
No, you did a fine job.
Okay.
You did a fine job.
So let's start with the cup. Let's start with betting on who it – no, you know what? Let's start with division winners and then build to the cup. That's a smarter way to do it.
All right. Let's start with you, Lambert. What do you got?
Okay. So I am betting $15 on Tampa at 5-4 to win that division. And $10 on Carolina at 4-1 to win that division. The only Canadian team I'm betting on to win is Toronto, and I'm putting $30 on them at 5-4. That is the team I think is most likely to win their division in the entire league. I'm putting $15 on Philadelphia to win the East at 3-1, and $5 on Boston at 5-2. And then Jesus. I'm going $10 on Vegas at 2-1, $5 on Colorado at 3-2, and $10 on Minnesota at 12-1, just because they're my like dark horse team for the whole league, and 12-1 is pretty good odds. So that's where I'm at with the whole league.
Sean?
Okay, so I view something like this, especially if we're doing it the divisions. I'm looking for longer shots. I've got no interest in putting down money on the Leafs to win the North just so I can get like slightly more than my money back at the end of it. I want to go a little further than that. So I'm going to go, let me start with $20 on the Blues at 5-1 for the reasons I mentioned before. I think we're sleeping on that a little bit. So I think there's good value there. In the Central, I didn't see a lot that I really loved there. But since we have to do something, I'm going to go $15 on Nashville at 7-1.
Oh,
I picked them to miss the playoffs, but you know, youngish goaltender, they've got some pieces, you know, could it all click together? Probably not, but at 7-1, I'll make a small bet there and see what happens. Give me $20 on the Islanders at 7-1. Just, you know, again, this is a defense and goaltending team. There's not going to be a lot of goals on either side. Short season, lots of randomness. It could happen. And then in the Canadian division, I want $20 each on both Vancouver and Calgary, both at 7-1. You know, for reasons we kind of discussed, you know, either one of those teams. I picked Vancouver to win the whole division a few months ago, and everyone laughed at me. And you know, I was probably deservedly so, but I got to at least stick with that. And Calgary, I could see things clicking for them. That leaves me with $5. I'm throwing my last $5 on the Ottawa Senators at 100-1 to win the North, because no team should be 100-1
yeah.
in any circumstances on anything in this season. That's a pure value bet. Do I think the Senators have any realistic shot? No. Of course not. But at 100-1, it doesn't even have to be all that realistic. And who the hell knows? Young team, new goalie, short season. I'll throw the ultimate long shot in there just because I think there's so much chaos and uncertainty in this season that I can't resist it.
All right, I'm going to do something a little different this year. Let's start off with the main bets. I'm going to go $20 on the Golden Knights to win the West. I'm going to go $20 on the Carolina Hurricanes to win the Central, even though I think Tampa is going to win. I'll put money on the Hurricanes there. I'll go $20 on the Capitals to win the East. They actually have really good odds, 6-1 to win the mm-hmm. East. So that's a pretty solid return if
that's,
they can do what the Capitals
do.
Yep.
I'm going to bet $12 on the Leafs to win the North Division. And I'm going to put $28 on the field, minus Jersey, Chicago, and Detroit.
Yeah, I don't think you can do that.
Yeah, what are you talking about?
That's not a thing, but yeah.
That's bullshit.
No, that's a dollar on every team except for...
Oh, I see.
Chicago, Detroit, and New Jersey.
Okay, well, I'm not going to write all that down.
No, you don't have to, but that's my bet. It's a dollar on every team except for Chicago, Detroit, New Jersey. All right, so those are my bets. On to the cup. What do you got, Ryan?
I went a pretty similar route. I put $25 on Colorado at 6-1. $10 each on Vegas, Carolina, and Tampa, and Boston, and then $15 each on Toronto, Philly, and Minnesota. I read that wrong. $15 each on Toronto and Philly, and $5 on Minnesota. Minnesota was at 55-1. So I, much like Sean with the Senators, I was just like, I like that team a little too much to not look at 55-1 and think that's doable.
First of all, even though the playoffs were so long ago, I can't hear somebody say the words "I read that wrong" without that stupid commercial popping into my head. So thank you to Ryan for that.
Oh yeah.
Shut up, Greg. That was not an invitation.
Sorry.
Okay. So here's my cup bets. Some overlap, but I tried to avoid too much. Give me $20 on the Blues at 18-1. Again, not to belabor the point. $20 on Carolina at 18-1 for all my hesitance and skepticism about how much everyone is sort of pumping their tires. 18-1 is good value.
You said 20 for them?
$20, yeah.
Okay, yep.
At 18-1. I mean, it for a team that is a favorite to be second in their division, you know, home ice at least one round of the playoffs, I can't avoid that. Staying in that division, give me $40 on the Lightning, 8-1. They're the best team in the league, I think. And you know, it's never sexy to put your money or your predictions on the defending champs, but I think they're well set up. The odds aren't great. Those are low-ish odds for a cup bet, which is why I'm sort of juicing the bet to make sure it's worth my while, but I'll take that. And then echoing Ryan, $20 on Minnesota at 55-1. That's, you know, I don't like the Wild a ton this year, but chance to win four figures on a $20 bet on a team that I think is at the very least likely to make the playoffs, I'll take that.
All right, I'll go. All right, I'm going to go $20 on the Leafs because they're going to win the cup. I'm going to go $20 on Carolina because they could win the cup. I'm going to go on $20 on Tampa because they're going to get Kucherov back and probably will win the cup. Going to go $20 on Philly because if it's not Toronto breaking their giant fucking drought, it'll be Philly in this cursed year. I'll go $10 on St. Louis because, like Sean said, you never know, like, if they could have another one in them. And then my long shot's $20 on my beloved Vancouver Canucks at 28-1.
How much on Vancouver? Sorry.
$10.
Got it.
There you go. That's the whole thing. Do we have the courage of conviction to say who they're picking? Because I am actually picking the Leafs to win. An annual tradition.
You're picking the Leafs to win the Stanley Cup?
Yes. You sound surprised.
You know what? I'll put it this way. If this isn't the year that the Leafs make a run, then maybe
it's never going
to
happen.
We have to acknowledge the critics are right, and there is something wrong with this. There's no conspiracy. We all know why the divisions were realigned like this, but there's not a team in the league that benefits more from the realignment than
absolutely.
It is all set up.
Yeah.
To make a run this year.
Gets them the fuck away from Boston.
Yep.
And Tampa.
To the Final Four, and then who knows, right?
Sean, it's okay to get excited, man. This is it. This is the year. This is the year it happens.
Sure it is.
Okay. Remember who told you first?
Yep. I mean, my pick is I'm picking the Lightning, which is incredibly boring, but I think they're the best team, and
yeah. I'm torn between Colorado and Vegas, and I think I'll go Vegas. Just because I like that goaltending a little bit more.
Do you like centers or no?
I mean, I get it. I totally get it. But, you know,
I just want them to lose to see, like you said, how they overcompensate. Like, what is the fucking Bill Foley, get me a center in pictures with Spider-Man fucking overcompensation?
They're going to get Dubois at the deadline for nothing. This is my prediction. Like, I'm dead serious.
Right.
It's just how it fucking works. Especially because, you know, the whole thing of Dubois wants out because he wants a bigger stage or whatever. And it's like, well, you know, it's a pretty big stage. Is the Vegas Golden
Las
Knights.
Las Vegas,
they make
that's
a whole
right.
big deal out of everything.
Sin City, baby. You want a big stage? How about the one that David Copperfield is on?
Huh? Okay.
It's a pretty big stage. Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed. All right, that is Puck Soup for this week. What didn't we talk about? Oh, there's games at Lake Tahoe. We knew that. Gary Bettman said the NHL will make more money if it didn't play.
But he's like, there's just such nice people that
out of the goodness of their hearts, yeah.
Just because they know it's important to us. I mean, what a wonderful guy.
Oh, did we want to do? I had a game. Did we want to do the game or no?
Let's save the game.
Okay,
save the game.
No problem.
I do think that when he says that we're going to lose more money at the club and league level by playing than not playing, I'll call bullshit on the league level part, because I think at the league level, you know, their TV contract is what it is regardless, and their sponsorship deals probably are what they are regardless. But I do think that he's right on the team by team level. Like, I've talked to teams that said
the Coyotes are going to take a bath on this one.
Yeah, like I've talked to teams that said, like, we actually don't want to have fans come in because we'd make more money if we just kept the building closed and didn't have to hire staff and shit like that. So I think on the club level he's right, but I'll call a little bullshit on the league level.
He might even be technically correct on the league level for this given year, but in the big picture, of course, the reason we have a season is because they believe that in the big picture, 10 years from now, it will have made more sense financially to still be playing than to take a full year off. So
yeah.
It's a nonsense comment, even if he's technically correct for this given season. They're not going to – they know that if they're not there, but the NBA is, and football is doing its playoffs, and Major League Baseball starts up, the NHL can't afford to just take a year off. Especially and then show up a year later.
Especially with an expansion team coming in next year. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
With an expansion team coming in, with a new TV contract coming at some point, like, it's ridiculous. So the idea that this league is making any decisions ever that aren't based on the bottom line is just insulting to any hockey fan who's paid any attention for the last 25-plus years.
I'll add about the teams, too. I was talking to a team this week for a story I'm doing for next week, and they made the point that they know they're not going to make money by having fans in the building whenever fans come back. Like, it's just – you can't make money off of fucking 5,000 people in the building. But what it is for them in I believe when they say this is that it's about maintaining those relationships with fans and season ticket holders and engaging with them to ensure that they come back and that they remain back and maybe buy more tickets when the team ratchets it up.
And if not those fans, their bereaved families who are maybe going to inherit some season tickets.
Oh, boy. Finally, we haven't talked about this yet. And Sean, apologies if you have to sit this one out. Just over 2 million people watched the Bears and Saints on Nickelodeon this past Sunday. Did you watch any of that game, Sean? Or Ryan?
No, no. I, of course, did not.
Did you see any of the highlights, Sean, from the Nickelodeon
I did, game? Yeah. I saw that we didn't have any access to that at all in Canada. But I saw some of the highlights and clips and that sort of thing, and I thought it was cool as hell. I thought it was a great idea. I didn't see enough of it to say whether it was well executed or not. But I'll tell you right now, if we had it in Canada, my 10-year-old would have been watching that game, and he didn't watch the regular one. So
I loved it. I feel like for, you know, if you're a dad watching a game with your kid, like, it was the perfect combination of stuff, like goofy stuff for the kids and then enough football for you. And I don't know. I would love to see the NHL do something like this, but they don't have a relationship with Viacom to
be able to. Well, I also I made the joke on Twitter, but you know, if they had slime cannons at the game, Corey Perry would keep trying to drink out of them.
Yes.
I can't have that.
It's a fantastic joke. It's a fantastic joke. But it was great. I mean, I appreciated the spirit of it, and I appreciated the fact that people were, you know, sports fans can be so fucking petty and insular and angry about any time you try to broaden the tent to new people with a different approach. And, you know, they had a young actress on the play-by-play or the commentary who didn't know a lot about football and was asking, like, not knowing a lot about football questions and shit. And you know, like, in a normal world, everybody's like, fuck you. Why are you wasting my time with this shit? But I think that sometimes comes down to venue. Like, you can't put the actress that doesn't really know a lot about football on the CBS broadcast. But on Nickelodeon, it's like, all right, this is all part of the vibe. So I don't know. It was a beautiful moment of communal viewing on Twitter that doesn't often happen. And also, it was great to see a sport try to reach a different audience through different means. And I couldn't help but think that if it was hockey trying to do it, then it would be a bunch of people bitching about, like, dumbing down the commentary and stuff. So
100% they would have.
Yeah, we'll see. But yeah, slime cannons, for sure. next time. All right, that's the show. Enjoy the opening of the season this week, and then enjoy hockey every single fucking night, in theory, depending on how the tests go, until June and July. I love how all the dates they give on the NHL website, as far as like when the season will end, they all have asterisks. They're all like subject to change.
Yeah, parentheses, we hope.
We hope. All right, cool. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'm Greg Wyshynski. You can read my stuff on ESPN, mostly ESPN+, Plus, basically all ESPN+. Plus. Thanks for all those of you that subscribe and read my stuff. And all the picks and previews and shit are on ESPN.com right now.
Sign up for the Puck Soup Patreon. We're going to do a bonus episode later this week. We're about to record a mailbag. I think that might be it. Newsletter, stick to sports, all that stuff's on there. It's a good value for your entertainment dollar. Check it out.
I've actually got something big to plug, which is Ooh. That I've got a new podcast starting this week. And it's the Athletic Hockey Show. It is going to be a daily podcast during the week with sort of rotating hosts and guests. I'm going to be on Thursdays with my old buddy Ian Mendez. We're going to be doing a show once a week and just covering all sorts of stuff. What happened the night before? What's going on in the league? It should be a lot of fun. So if you're sitting there going, gosh, I wish I could hear even more of this guy, go look for that. You don't need to have subscribed to The Athletic to hear that podcast. You can still get it on your other places and check it out. And I hope people will enjoy that. And there's going to be other shows during the week. The Two-Man Advantage is with Scott and Pierre is still part of that. Ian and Haley are doing a show on Mondays. It's all going to be out there, and I will still be doing this show as well. So
great, yes,
you get twice as much me.
It's great stuff.
Finally, people have access to your opinions, right?
Yeah,
yes, exactly.
Looking very much forward to all the comments about how they wish there could be a podcast with you, Ian, and me, or you, Ian, and Lambert. Which
I don't think there's going to be too many calls for the latter, but we'll see.
You have a robust fan base, Ryan.
We'll see.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next week, and bye.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to a NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.